Hello, everyone.
We are starting chapter 28 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, called Snape's Worst Memory. We know what that's about. I think it has to do with Love Actually. By order of the Ministry of Magic, Dolores Jane Umbridge, High Inquisitor, has replaced Albus Dumbledore as head of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. The above is in accordance with Educational Decree No. 28, signed Cornelius Oswald Fudge, Minister of Magic. The notices had gone up all over the school overnight. They did not explain how every single person within the castle seemed to know that Dumbledore had overcome two Aurors, the High Inquisitor, the Minister of Magic, and his junior assistant, to escape. No matter where Harry went within the castle the next day, the sole topic of conversation was Dumbledore's flight. And though some of the details might have gone awry in the retelling, Harry overheard one second-year girl assuring another that Fudge was now lying in St. Mungo's with a pumpkin for a head. It was surprising how accurate the rest of their information was. Everybody seemed aware, for instance, that Harry and Marietta were the only students to have witnessed the scene in Dumbledore's office, and as Marietta was now in the hospital wing, Harry found himself besieged with requests to give a first-hand account wherever he went. "Dumbledore will be back before long," said Ernie McMillan, confidently, on the way back from herbology after listening intently to Harry's story. "They couldn't keep him away in our second year, and they won't be able to this time. The fat friar told me," he dropped his voice conspiratorially, so that Harry, Ron, and Hermione had to lean close to listen to him, "that Umbridge tried to get back into his office last night after they'd searched the castle and grounds for him. Couldn't get past the gargoyle. Head's office has sealed itself against her." Ernie smirked. "Apparently she had a right little tantrum." "Oh, I expect she fancied herself sitting up there in the head's office," said Hermione viciously, as they walked up the steps into the entrance hall. "Lording it over the other teachers, the stupid puffed-up, power-crazy old..." "Do you really want to finish that sentence, Granger?" Draco Malfoy had slid out from behind the door, followed by Crabbe and Goyle. His pale, pointed face was alight with malice. "Afraid I'm going to have to dock a few points from Gryffindor and Hufflepuff," he drawled. "You can't take points from fellow prefects, Malfoy," said Ernie at once. "I know prefects can't dock points from each other," sneered Malfoy. Crabbe and Goyle snickered. "But members of the Inquisitorial Squad..." "The what?" said Hermione sharply. "The Inquisitorial Squad, Granger," said Malfoy, pointing towards a tiny silver eye upon his robes, just beneath his prefect's badge. "A select group of students who are supportive of the Ministry of Magic, handpicked by Professor Umbridge. Anyway, members of the Inquisitorial Squad do have the power to dock points. So, Granger, I'll have 5 from you for being rude about our new headmistress. Macmillan, 5 for contradicting me. 5 because I don't like you, Potter. Weasley, your shirt's untucked, I'll have another 5 for that. Oh yeah, I forgot. You're a mudblood, Granger, so 10 for that." You know, at this point, given that, like, their lives are at stake, why do the, like, the good guys care about the points? I mean, obviously, Malfoy is just trying to do it to get a rise out of them, but, like, they're trying to, like, stay alive here. They're not trying to win any house cups at this point. Ron pulled out his wand, but Hermione pushed it away, whispering, "Don't!" "Wise move, Granger," breathed Malfoy. "New head, new times. Be good, Potty, Weasley King." Weasel King. He strode away, laughing heartily with Crabbe and Goyle. "He was bluffing," said Ernie, looking appalled. "He can't be allowed to dock points. That would be ridiculous. It would completely undermine the prefix system." Right. But Harry, Ron, and Hermione had turned automatically toward the giant hourglasses set in the niches along the wall behind them, which recorded house points. Gryffindor and Ravenclaw had been neck and neck in the lead that morning. Even as they watched, stones flew upward, reducing the amount in the lower bulbs. In fact, the only glass that seemed unchanged was the emerald-filled one of Slytherin. "Noticed, have you?" said Fred's voice. He and George had just come down the marble staircase and joined Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Ernie in front of the hourglasses. "Malfoy just docked us about 50 points," said Harry furiously, as they watched several more stones fly upward from the Gryffindor hourglass. Yeah, Montague tried to do this during break, said George. What do you mean, tried, said Ron quickly. He never managed to get the words out, said Fred, due to the fact that we forced him headfirst into that vanishing cabinet on the first floor. Hermione looked very shocked. But you'll get into terrible trouble. Not until Montague reappears, and that could take weeks. I don't know where we sent him, said Fred coolly. Anyway, we've decided we don't care about getting into trouble anymore. Have you ever? Asked Hermione. Of course we have, said George. Never been expelled, have we? We've always known where to draw the line, said Fred. We might have stepped a toe across it occasionally, said George. But we've always stopped short of causing a real mayhem, said Fred. But now, said Ron tentatively. Well, now, said George. What with Dumbledore gone, said Fred. We reckon a bit of mayhem, said George. Is exactly what our dear new head deserves, said Fred. You mustn't, whispered Hermione. You really mustn't. She'd love a reason to expel you. You don't get it, Hermione, do you? Said Fred, smiling at her. We don't care about staying anymore. We'd walk right out if we weren't determined to do our bit for Dumbledore first. So anyway, he checked his watch. Phase one is about to begin. I'd get in the Great Hall for lunch if I were you. The way the teachers will see you, you can't have had anything to do with it. Anything to do with what? Said Hermione anxiously. You'll see, said George. Run along now. Fred and George turned away and disappeared in the swelling crowd, descending the stairs toward lunch. Looking highly disconcerted, Ernie mumbled something about unfinished transfiguration homework and scurried away. I think we should get out of here, you know, said Hermione nervously, just in case. Yeah, all right, said Ron, and the three of them moved toward the doors to the Great Hall, but Harry had barely glimpsed today's ceiling of scudding white clouds when somebody tapped him on the shoulder, and turning, he found himself almost nose-to-nose with Filch, the caretaker. He took several hasty steps backward. Filch was best viewed at a distance. The headmistress would like to see you, Potter, he leered. I can do it, said Harry stupidly, thinking of whatever Fred and George were planning. Filch's jowls wobbled with silent laughter. Guilty conscience, eh? He wheezed. Follow me. Harry glanced back at Ron and Hermione, who were both looking worried. He shrugged and followed Filch back into the entrance hall, against the tide of hungry students. Filch seemed to be in an extremely good mood. He hummed creakily under his breath as they climbed the marble staircase. As they reached the first landing, he said, Things are changing around here, Potter. I've noticed, said Harry coldly. Yes, I've been telling Dumbledore for years and years he's too soft with you all, said Filch, chuckling nastily. You filthy little beasts would never have dropped stink pellets if you'd known I had in my power to whip you raw, would you now? Nobody would have thought of throwing fanged frisbees down the corridors if I could have strung you up by the ankles in my room, would they? When Educational Decree 29 comes in, Potter, I'll be allowed to do those things. And she's asked the minister to sign an order for the expulsion of Peeves. Oh, things are going to be very different around here with her in charge. Umbridge had obviously gone to some lengths to get Filch on her side, Harry thought, and the worst of it was that he probably would prove an important weapon. His knowledge of the school's secret passageways and hiding places was probably second only to the Weasley twins. Here we are, he said, leering down at Harry as he rapped three times upon Professor Umbridge's door and pushed it open. The Potter boy to see you, ma'am. Umbridge's office, so very familiar to Harry from his many detentions, was the same as usual except for a large wooden block lying across the front of her desk, on which golden letters spelled the word headmistress, also his firebolt, and Fred and George's clean sweeps, which he saw with a pang, were now chained and padlocked to a stout iron peg in the wall behind the desk. Umbridge was sitting behind the desk, busily scribbling on some of her pink parchment, but looked up and smiled widely at their entrance. Thank you, Argus, she said sweetly. Not at all, ma'am, not at all, said Filch, bowing as low as his rheumatism would permit, and exiting backward. Sit, said Umbridge curtly, pointing toward a chair, and Harry sat. She continued to scribble for a few moments. He watched some of the foul kittens gambolling over the plates over her head, wondering what fresh horror she had in store for him. Well now, she said finally, setting down her quill and looking like a toad about to swallow a particularly juicy fly. Would you like a drink? Sorry, what would you like to drink? What? Said Harry, quite sure he had misheard her. To drink, Mr. Potter, she said, smiling still more widely. Tea, coffee, pumpkin juice. As she named each drink, she gave a short wave to her wand, and a cup or glass of it appeared on her desk. "Nothing, thank you." "I wish you'd have a drink with me," she said, her voice becoming more dangerously sweet. "Choose one." "Fine, tea then," said Harry, shrugging. She got up and made quite a performance of adding milk with her back to him. Then she bustled around the desk with it, smiling in sinisterly sweet fashion. "There," she said, handing it to him. "Drink it before it gets cold, won't you? Well now, Potter, I thought we should have a little chat after the distressing events of last night." He said nothing. She settled back into her seat and waited. When several long moments had passed in silence, she said gaily, "You're not drinking up." He raised the cup to his lips and then, just as suddenly, lowered it. One of the horrible painted kittens behind Umbridge had a great round blue eye, just like Mad-Eye Moody's magical one, and it just occurred to Harry what Mad-Eye would say if he ever heard that Harry had drunk anything offered by a known enemy. "What's the matter?" said Umbridge, who was still watching him. "Do you want sugar?" "No," said Harry. He raised the cup to his lips again and pretended to take a sip, though keeping his mouth very tightly closed. Umbridge's smile widened. "Good," she whispered. "Very good. Now then," she leaned forward a little, "where's Albus Dumbledore?" "No idea," said Harry promptly. Drink up," she said, still smiling. "Now, Mr. Potter, let us not play childish games. I know that you know where he has gone. You and Dumbledore have been in this together from the beginning. Consider your position, Mr. Potter." "I don't know where he is," Harry pretended to drink again. "Very well," said Umbridge, looking displeased. "In that case, you will kindly tell me the whereabouts of Sirius Black." Harry's stomach turned over and his hand holding the teacup shook so that the cup rattled in its saucer. He tilted the cup to his mouth as his lips pressed together so that some of the hot liquid trickled down onto his robes. "I don't know," he said, a little too quickly. "Mr. Potter," said Umbridge, "let me remind you that it was I who almost caught the criminal Black in the Gryffindor fire in October. I know perfectly well it was you he was meeting, and if I had any proof, neither of you would be at large today, I promise you. I repeat, Potter, where is Sirius Black?" "No idea," said Harry loudly. "Haven't got a clue." They stared at each other so long that Harry felt his eyes watering. Then she stood up. "Very well, Potter, I will take your word for it this time, but be warned. The might of the Ministry stands behind me. All channels of communication in and out of the school are being monitored. A flu network regulator is keeping watch over every fire in Hogwarts, except my own, of course. My inquisitorial squad is opening and reading all owl posts entering and leaving the castle. And Mr. Filch is observing all secret passages in and out of the castle. If I find a shred of evidence..." And there was a loud boom. The very floor of the office shook. Umbridge slipped sideways, clutching her desk for support, looking shocked. "What was..." She was gazing toward the door. Harry took the opportunity to empty his almost full cup of tea into the nearest vase of dried flowers. He could hear people running and screaming several floors below. "Back to lunch with you, Potter," cried Umbridge, raising her wand and dashing out of the office. Harry gave her a few seconds start and then hurried after her to see what the source of all the uproar was. And maybe we'll stop there for tonight. I hope you like that, kitten. I miss you very much. We'll see you soon. I hope you're having a good time with your family on your little vacation. But I think you would have a better time on vacation with me because I'm so great and I love you so much. So anyways, I hope you sleep well and have sweet dreams. I love you, kitten. Good night.